which will be POR versus Jefferson County Commission. Again, please take your time transitioning. Mr. Saxon, whenever you're ready. No rush.
May it please the court, I'm John Saxon. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Angela Poore. I don't believe I have ever quoted Yogi Berra during a federal oral argument before, but I think some of what you're going to hear from me is deja vu all over. We're going to talk about some things that Ms. Leonard talked about. I think the most important reason that the trial court's decision on summary judgment should be reversed is that she failed completely to examine pretext. She took the approach that the question of pretext is relevant only if the plaintiff presents a prima facie case, which Ms. Poore did not do because she could not name a proper comparator. I think that is not a correct statement of law. Jenkins versus Nail, the Lewis case, most recently 3 weeks ago, the Berry case. She failed to consider at all circumstantial evidence. Had the court properly analyzed the plaintiff's circumstantial evidence under Lewis, she would have found that even without a proper comparator, there was more than enough circumstantial evidence for a jury to find for the plaintiff.
And can you just clarify what circumstantial evidence, I guess excluding the fact that I believe Ms. Poore was replaced by a white woman, is that correct?
Let me talk about reassignment.
Okay.
Ms. Poore went to work for Jefferson County in October of 2017. By July of 2018, she was convinced that there was hostility toward her by her African-American supervisor, Ms. Wilkins. She requested reassignment. And then here are the six things that happened with regard to that request for reassignment. Number one, the decision was supposed to be made under Rule 11.9 of the Rules of the Personnel Board of Jefferson County by the appointing authority, Tony Patelis, the county manager. He did not make that decision. It was made by Ms. Rodriguez in denying reassignment. She is the personnel manager, and Clark versus Huntsville Board, City Board of Education says if you don't follow your own policy, that can be evidence of pretext. Then, what were the reasons for denying reassignment? Well, take your pick. There are five of them. First, she was told, you can't be reassigned because you haven't been here for a year. The only problem with that is that's not in Rule 11.9. Then, when it came time to go to the EEOC, they told the EEOC she couldn't be reassigned because she was on a performance improvement plan. Two problems with that. Number one, she wasn't. And number two, that is not a bar to reassignment under Rule 11.9. Then it came time to answer our interrogatories, and we get the third answer. Oh, she wasn't on a performance improvement plan. She was about to be put on a performance improvement plan. The only problem with that is also not a bar to reassignment under Rule 11.9. Then we get to the point where they said, as part of the summary judgment response, well, we don't have any record of her actually asking for reassignment. Problems with that is Jeff Smith's affidavit, which the defendants produced, Michelle Rodriguez's affidavits, which they produced, said, yes, she did request reassignment. And in fact, Ms. Poore's email of July 10, 2018 was to Ms. Rodriguez and said, I want to be reassigned. Finally, we get to their position in responding to summary judgment motion. They said, we did not reassign Ms. Poor because you have to have two directors' approval, the director you're leaving and the director you're going to. The only problem, that is not in Rule 11.9 either. So when you have an employer that does not follow its own procedures and then gives five conflicting, shifting reasons for failure to reassign, that is pretext.
You have to show, though, pretext not only that the decision was pretextual, but that it was pretext for a racially discriminatory decision, not pretext for we don't like her or, you know, any other kind of reason. And tell me where you have evidence of discrimination other than Wilkins, or is Wilkins the only connection to discriminatory intent?
She is the primary source, Your Honor, African-American female supervising my Caucasian client.
But she wasn't involved in the negative employment actions, right? She wasn't the driver of those.
Your Honor, I would beg to differ. Mr. Patel has testified that he deferred to Ms. Wilkins. Give me 1 second to find that. He deferred to Ms. Wilkins and her supervisor in making the decision to terminate.
Where is that? Can you tell me where to find that in the record?
I will have to look, Your Honor. If I can't find it right now, I will look in a moment when I get back up.
Okay.
But the reason it's race is when Ms. Poor went to Michelle Rodriguez, which she did twice with the employee equity and inclusion department, she complained about Ms. Wilkins and specifically referenced race and said she was afraid of Ms. Wilkins, after which Ms. Wilkins threatened to terminate her. So I think this all goes back to a basis of race. But the problem is the trial court didn't examine any of that. You don't have a comparator. We don't even have to look at that. And I don't think that is the proper analysis. In fact, in the Jenkins case, the court held that racially based comments can be considered, even though they were not part of the decision-making process or were far away temporally that they would not be evidence of would not constitute direct evidence. What the trial judge did is she did look at some of this and these comments and said, "Oh, that's not direct evidence," and that ended the discussion.
What were the comments?
Well, comments that Ms. Wilkins made, like, "Well, if it were up to me, I would fire all of the white managers in the department." Or, depending on who you believe, all of the white male managers, clearly evidencing racial animus.
And how long was that made before she was terminated, or allegedly said? Does Ms. Wilkins deny that, saying that?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And so how long was that allegedly made before the termination here at the end of the one-year period?
Well, it was made, all of this... I'd have to look to see when that was made, but it was
within the 1 year.
Within the 1 year. She started October 30th, 2017, complained to HR on
July 18.
It was in that period. But then if you look at the complaints to the employee, to EID, the Equity and Inclusion Department, and to HR, and then filing her EEOC charge and termination, all of that was within 3 months.
But she had a three-month appraisal, a six-month, and a nine-month, and they all were negative. They all said needs improvement in at least three, if not five, categories.
That's correct, Judge Hall.
You don't dispute there were some performance problems.
There were allegations of performance problems. And we think
There were reviews. Of her performance and completed written documents saying where she was deficient, correct?
Correct. Okay. I'm just not saying that we would concede those were...
Well, what evidence do you have that those performance appraisals were not based on something and were made up?
Well, we both in her deposition and in her extensive affidavit, Ms. Poor addressed all of that. And what you had were
things. But we have her saying that's not true,
correct.
Basically.
Correct. And she was held accountable for things that were not part of her responsibility. And we laid out the examples of that in our brief.
What about her 23 absences during the first year of her employment? Does she contest that? I assume there are pretty good records of that.
She had some absences and probably more than should have been, but she went through the reasons in great detail in her deposition for those absences.
And what can you remind me some of those reasons?
Your Honor, I'm not sure I can at this moment, but that was gone through. What happened is that it became clear, I won't say from day one, but very early on, that there was hostility from Ms. Wilkins toward Ms. Poore. And I would argue that she was set up to fail from day one.
But if you don't go to work, then that's a problem, right? I assume she had vacation days that probably she also used.
Well, that's two weeks, basically. Sick children and things like that. The next point I would make, Your Honor, just going back to the standard. The court accused Ms. Poore, and this is an exact quotation from page 27 of her opinion, of injection of an alleged racial component into the decision-making process, unquote. Will we plead guilty to that? Every plaintiff in a race discrimination case involving termination, failure to promote, demotion, whatever it is, injects race into the decision-making process. Finally, I would point out on this point, it is a fact question for the jury as to whether the reasons offered are pretext for discrimination.
But does it matter then under that analysis who the race of the decision makers? Because it appears that the folks who actually ultimately terminated her were also white.
Well, the appointing authority, Mr. Patelis, the county manager, did make that decision to terminate her. And I will try to find the record site where he said he deferred to Ms. Wilkins and her supervisor on that point.
Did you raise a cat's paw argument?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Okay.
Which the trial court rejected. The final thing I would say, and I don't know if it's of any concern to you, as to whether the reassignment issue is actionable discrimination without any economic harm. We will certainly know a little more when the Supreme Court decides the Muldrow versus City of St. Louis case. But I would argue that this is simply a straight statutory construction decision.
And forgive me if I overlooked it, but did you raise the cat's paw argument here or just at the district court?
No, we raised it here in our appellate brief.
Okay.
Who signed the 3-6 and 9-month appraisals?
I believe they were signed by Ms. Wilkins.
The last two were, but not the first one.
Your Honor, we raised it in our brief, cat's paw theory, at pages 47 and 48.
Great, thank you.
Okay. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Carroll.
May it please the court, it is an honor and privilege to be here before you today. My name is Don Carroll, and I'm an attorney for the Appalachian Jefferson County Commission. The county asking this court to affirm the lower court's decision because of three things. The court correctly determined there was no retaliation claim before the court, and the district court correctly determined there was no discrimination in the decision not to reassign the plaintiff. Likewise, the district court correctly determined there was not discrimination in the decision to terminate the plaintiff from the county. At this point, I would like to just clear up a couple things that my friend said here let's start off with the reassignment. The reassignment at Jefferson County is a government entity that falls up under the personnel board of Jefferson County. Rule 11.9 is the rule in the Jefferson County, the Personnel Board of Jefferson County's rule. And however, Jefferson County has its own rule about reassigning employees. And what I would like to do is I would like for the court, I would like to point the court to what's been cited in the appellant's brief as R-43-4, pages 5 and 6. It is the internal, is the Jefferson County internal reassignment form, and that evidences the need for both directors' approval. It is also dated before the plaintiff requested assignment, which is further evidence of its existence. The second document I'd like to point, I'd like to for the court to examine is document in the lower court 4344, which is Susan Frey, another employee of Jefferson County, who is a white employee that was in the same department that the plaintiff was in, who requested reassignment, who states in her affidavit on paragraph 8 that she had to have the approval of both of her directors, the ingoing director, department head that she wanted to go to, and the outgoing department head where she was leaving to.
Sir, just counselor, two things with respect to the reassignment issue. One, your friend on the other side cites two statements that the county provided for why they wouldn't reassign Ms. Poore, and then backtracked because the reasons weren't supported either by the rule or the facts. How do you reconcile that?
I really don't know exactly what did he actually state. If I'm kidding, I don't even remember what he actually said.
Well, I think there was one example where there was a time requirement. She was denied the reassignment because she had been there for less than a year, but it wasn't required in terms of being there for a year. I think there was also an issue about a PIP that she was denied because she was on a PIP, but it turned out she really wasn't on a PIP. Those are the two examples that come to my mind.
Okay, gladly, Your Honor. Thank you. First of all, the time requirement that he said that she was told that she couldn't transfer within a year. So Personnel Board of Jefferson County has two rules. It's 11.9, which is a reassignment rule that you can be transferred. 11.10 is a rule that says if you haven't been working for Jefferson County in a year, for a year, you cannot be transferred within a year. So Ms. Poore, she did email and asked for reassignment, but when she was talking to the HR director, she said she wanted to be reassigned or transferred, either one. The HR director in her affidavit that we provided, that's in the record, said, hey, Ms. Poore, you cannot be transferred within a year. She told her that when they first met. However, you do qualify for reassignment, but I would have to see, do you want to do it or do you want me to do it? And so at that time, the HR director took on the initiative to go ahead and try to get her assigned. And so that's the difference between the time. But there's never been a time that Poore was told she could not be reassigned for less than a year, for working there for less than a year. And that is actually, we provided that reason in our EEOC position statement.
And which affidavit did you say that was in? Or did you? Maybe I misunderstood you.
The affidavit of Michelle Rodriguez, the
okay,
the HR director.
Got it. Thank you.
And also, as far as the PIP is inconsequential. It is, there's never been a reason, Ms. Poore has never been told that she could not be reassigned because of a PIP. Her director, like you say, her director, which is Jeff Smith White, he said that when in the position statement, when Michelle Rodriguez, the HR director, called him to see if he would give a approval for Ms. Poore, Jeff told Michelle Rodriguez, hey, I will not approve her to go to another department because she had performance deficiencies within my department that I've witnessed firsthand.
I got to go back to what you just said. I know you say that she was never told that she couldn't be reassigned because she'd been there for last year or because of a PIP. But doesn't she testify or have an affidavit saying she was told? I don't know what the truth is, but doesn't she testify, I have an affidavit, I was first told I couldn't be reassigned because I hadn't been here a year? Doesn't she say that?
Well,
that may not be true, but doesn't she say that she was told that?
I think she said that she couldn't be transferred within a year. So,
well, is there a difference between transfer and reassignment?
Yes,
am I?
All right. Yes, ma'am.
All right, tell me the difference.
So the difference is if you're being transferred within Jefferson County, that is going from one appointing authority to another appointing authority. And we give the example, like, if you work for Jefferson County, and where the county manager is the appointing authority, and you want to be transferred, you would leave Jefferson County Commission and go to, say, the city of Birmingham, where the mayor...
Okay, so what do you say? She couldn't be...
She could not be transferred.
Within a year.
Yes.
Okay, and you're saying that's true.
That is true.
The reassignment part is not true.
The reassignment part is not true.
Okay, all right, now let's go to the PIP. Does she say, I was told I was on a PIP, so I couldn't be transferred when she was not on a PIP? I know you deny she was told that, but does she say that?
Does she say that she could not be transferred when she was on a PIP?
Yes.
I'm not aware that she said that.
I'm just trying to see if this is, if the reasons were shifting and changing. I don't know whether they were or not. I'm just trying to see whether there's a factual issue as to whether the reasons changed. I mean, that's what he argues.
Well,
and you seem to be arguing, no, she wasn't told that. That's not, the reasons did not change.
So what did happen is the HR director, when she asked her director, would you give Ms. Pour an approval. The HR director said, no, I will not. He said, he did say this.
Okay, just help me with this. Did the reasons change over time, or do you say they gave the same reason all the time?
I say they gave the same reason from the time that she was told she couldn't be reassigned to the time that we responded in our EEOC position statement.
And what was that reason?
The reason she couldn't be reassigned is because her director did not give her approval. That you have to have
because
both
of the two. Okay. So you say that was the only reason she was given. She couldn't be reassigned because she had to have both agree. And Ms. Wilkins wouldn't agree.
Ms. Wilkins was not her director.
Or Ms.
Who? Just Smith.
Mr. Smith wouldn't agree because she already had performance problems, so he was going to send her on to somebody else.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask you about the absences? It looked like the district court relied on the absences. In part, is that correct?
In part, yes, ma'am.
All right, and do you rely on the absences on appeal in part for the legitimate reason why she was terminated?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so as to those, I did go through the pay records, and I found that she gets 8 hours of sick leave a month under the system. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And she gets 1 day of vacation a month. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and so that would be in the year, she'd get 24 days of something.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and so I went through the pay records, and a lot of these were like 2 hours off a doctor. I mean, it's all well documented. It's like every pay record. It's got every day, 2 hours off, doctor's appointment. It's got everything.
Yes, and we submitted those.
Yes, and so all of the partial times were son and daughter visits, doctor visits, so forth. All of them are well baby checkup. All of those come to 9 days. The partial days, if I add up all the hours, come to 9 days. And then all the others, her husband had a stroke, whole family with violence, son surgery, husband in hospital, son was hospitalized. So she has, actually, there's not really a vacation day for anything. It's all health related of her family. And they only come up to they come up to 27 days, and she had 24 days.
Yes, ma'am.
So why is that not, looks like that reliance on her absences as pretext, since she really had the time and that was not, so just help me with that.
Well, if you're talking about pretext for racial discrimination, we're saying that the time was considered just as any employee, that if you're not coming to work or that you're missing work, that
so even though she was guaranteed she got these days off, you're saying the fact that she took her full time was part of the problem?
That she took over her time was the problem. Not that she took her full time. That she took over her time, that it's the probationary time.
Well, the records show she took over 3 days of her time. That's all she took over.
Right.
Okay, I thought they were saying it was 26 days and it was too many absences.
Well, it was 27 days, of course, that probationary period, Your Honor, is the time when Jefferson County has the time to evaluate.
Do you get no time, or do you get to accrue? Do you accrue this time?
You accrue this time.
Okay.
That's the time when the employer gets to evaluate the employees.
You get the time, but you can't take it because you're being evaluated?
You can take it, Yona.
Okay.
You just can't take it.
So why do these
excess of the amount of time that you're given?
Okay.
And she took an excess of the amount of
time. And how much excess did she take?
She took 27 days versus 24 days, Yana. And that was just a evaluation that the county manager made that, hey, is this employee may not be a good employee as far as attendance problems. But the county manager...
So you agree it's 27 days. She got 24. She took 27, and 3 days is the excess. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm telling you that. Yeah, she did acquire. She accrued 24 days, and she took 27 days.
Okay. So it's really three, right? It's really she took
three days
that she was supposed to be working that she wasn't working. The 24 she had every license not to be there, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Ms. Poor also argues that she was essentially set up for failure, and it doesn't seem to be a dispute that her employment file didn't show that she was improving. What steps did the county take or could have taken to help her improve her job performance?
So the county did actually take some steps to help Ms. Poor in her 3 month appraisal. Ms. Poor recorded two needs improvement. In our 6 months of appraisal, she recorded three needs improvement. So the county, actually what the county did was set her up with a STAR partner, which is Edwin Juergen, and his affidavit is in the file as well. I mean, is in the record as well. And Edwin Juergen was her STAR partner, the one that she would go to ask any questions about, to get acclimated to the county, to learn how things work. And also, the county also provided her with a coach, which was Tiffany Owens, and her affidavit is in the record as well. And Tiffany Owens was there to coach her up and to get her performance up to par. And not only that, the county actually, after she had problems with the parking deck, and she had problems with employees and leaving money unsecured, what the county did was initiated a meeting or a training session with the personnel board of Jefferson County on Ms. Poor's behalf, and that's in the record as well. They did that on Ms. Poor's behalf just to see if we could get her up to par as far as working. And also, the county when the county put an employee on a PIP, which is a performance improvement plan, it's not punitive. That PIP was to try to get Poor's performance up to par, because even Ms. Wilkins, who Ms. Poor is accusing of discrimination, said that in the letter, Ms. Wilkins' pen, that's in the record as well, it's document 43-4, and it's part of the performance improvement plan. She says, hey, I think you can do this job. I really think you could do the work if you would pay attention to detail, and gave her different things that she could do. It wasn't because she didn't think Ms. Poor had the aptitude to do the job. She just didn't think that she was committed enough to do it, because it was a fast-paced job and always changing. And if you didn't pay attention, or if you didn't come to work,
I've got one more question quickly, since we're at the end of your time. But your friend at the other table says that the actual decision maker indicated that he had relied on Wilkins' recommendation that Ms. Poor be fired. Do you agree or disagree with that contention?
That's incorrect. That is not in the record at all. The county manager relies on several things when he's making the determination, one being all disciplinary matters, time and attendance. He does take into account recommendation of her director, which would be Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith would have given a recommendation whether he wanted to terminate her. And the county manager also said that he did take in consideration of her appraisals, her recommendation from her director, which the director did who is white, the same race as poor, and the decision maker, the county manager, is white, the same race as poor, did decide that, hey, we want to terminate her. She wasn't a good fit. Jeff's recommendation was she was not a good fit for the organization, and Mr. Patella's...
Now, the appraisals were signed by Wilkins, so county manager, the key ones, the first one's not, the 3 months one's not, but the 6 month and the 9 month, and the PIP, who is the PIP signed by, or do you remember?
The PIP was signed by Jeff Smith, the director. Okay. Trisha wrote a letter
You don't deny that the, I'm not sure it's outcome determinative anyway, but you don't deny that Wilkins' appraisals were a factor in the county manager's decision.
I do not deny that the appraisals were a factor in the decision. However, Wilkins was her immediate supervisor, but she was not the only one that had a part in the appraisals. Jeff Smith, her director, when Poor had problems in her 3 month appraisal, Ms. Wilkins went to Jeff Smith, who was the director of the department, and said, "Hey, look, we got a manager, a high level person that's not performing." Jeff Smith then said, "Hey, let me get involved." So he started meeting with Poor. That's in the record that he started meeting with her. He started assessing her work record and her behavior at work. And he also, him and Mr. Smith, Mr. Jurgen, Ms.
One last question.
Agreed on the...
When they terminate her, I assume it's signed by the county manager.
Excuse me?
The county manager signs the termination letter.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And does he outline in the letter what are the reasons for the termination, or does he just testify about them?
They do not outline in the letter because she's actually charged with whatever the disciplinary or violations are.
Uh-huh.
However, he did testify in his affidavit.
Okay, so he wasn't deposed. The county manager wasn't deposed.
No, my friend across the aisle didn't depose anyone.
Okay.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Saxon, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And first, you said that you raised the cat's paw theory on pages 46 and 47 of your brief, but as I look at that, that's the conclusion and the signature page.
You're right, Your Honor. I wrote that down in making notes about the pages, and I obviously wrote down the wrong pages. In looking quickly, I could not find that a moment ago.
Okay, thank you.
I do think we raised the cat's paw theory. Let me address... opposing counsel said that there is a reassignment form that requires both signatures. That's the reassignment form to the reassignment records they produced that went in effect 2 years after Ms. Poor was gone. Second, he said there is a requirement that you have to have been there a year to be transferred. Fine. Transfer is not part of this case. My client did not ask for a transfer. Third, he said in response to a very pointed question, Ms. Poor was given the same reason each time for denying the transfer. Please look carefully at what we have put in the record. First, she was told, you haven't been there a year. Then, when it came time to go to the EEOC, they said...
I'm confused. She was requesting a reassignment,
yes,
not a transfer.
Correct.
That's your position.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And there's an email July 10 to Ms. Rodriguez from my client requesting reassignment. When it comes time to go to the EEOC, they indicate, no, she was on a PIP. Then when it comes time to answer interrogatories, they say, well, she wasn't on a PIP. She was about to be on a PIP. And then when it comes time to respond to summary judgment, they say she didn't have the two department heads. Those are shifting, changing reasons, evidencing pretext.
Do you have the spot in the record that you said you would find where the decision maker said that he relied heavily on the Wilkins perspective?
No, Your Honor, that's what I was looking for. It's referenced in our brief, and I just wrote down the wrong pages of where that's, but I believe that's in the record. unless I'm mistaken.
Well, so my question about the cat's paw theory was one question, which is, did you allege a cat's paw theory? And then the separate factual question, which I guess could be relevant in either the kind of more ordinary McDonnell-Douglas analysis or the cat's paw theory, was, do you have a specific testimony that this evaluation was especially important to the decision, or something along those lines?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's the page I can't find, but I believe it would be in Mr. Dallas's affidavit.
Okay.
Just finally, very quickly.
Mr. whose affidavit?
Mr. Patelis, Tony Patelis.
Oh, okay, the county manager.
The county claims that it took steps with regard to helping Ms. Poore. They were required to have what's called mediation with her, and that never happened. The final thing in response to an earlier...
They were required to have mediation? What do you mean?
That is a term of art they use different from what most of us would think of mediation, where you have an independent neutral trying to resolve a dispute. Their requirement is that when you've got a problem employee, HR then engages in a process to work with them. That never happened.
So counsel on the other side's comments about, I think, Jeff Smith meetings with her, efforts to counsel or mentor her, you're saying that in your position is that didn't happen?
It did not happen in the way in which it is supposed to happen under the rules of Jefferson County Personnel Board.
So what counsel just described was a more informal process as opposed to the formal process, which, just to clarify, you're saying never occurred.
Informal and incomplete.
Okay.
And then finally, I would say as to what the test should be for all of this, I don't think convincing mosaic is the term. Very simply, totality of the circumstances. And if you look at the totality of the circumstances, certainly in this case, you will see ample evidence which would permit a reasonable juror to infer a discriminatory intent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We need to finish.
Okay. All right.
Unless you want.
No, that's fine. We'll move to our last case in the morning.